Charles Woodson, Desmond Howard, Denard Robinson, Timanga Biakabatuka, from Yost to Harbaugh, passed down from generation to generation, Michigan football has stood the test of time. What's that feeling you get when you catch your first glimpse of the big house? When you hear, "And take the field." When you see the team emerge from the tunnel, sprint across the field, and touch that famed M-Go Blue banner. Saturdays in the fall, tailgates with friends and family, favorite players, favorite teams, and unforgettable moments. A lifetime of memories. College football in 2020 may be unique, but it has arrived at the corner of Stadium and Main, which is where you can find Michael Spath and Justin Rowe sharing their analysis, their stories, and their emotions about this year's Wolverine. This is the Stadium and Main podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.
Welcome to the Stadium and Main podcast. I am Justin Rowe, and I am joined today by Michael Spath, as well as, once again, former Michigan defensive end Will Heininger. Guys, it is Sunday, November 8th. I'm really stuck in October.
You're really stuck in October, man. This is like the second time this week where you've mentioned it's October. Like, I don't think you want to give it up. I think maybe back in October, the middle part of
really
this month,
well.
There's a lot of promise and hope for the future. Now here we are in week three of the season. Michigan's 1-2 and has lost to a Michigan State team that got absolutely annihilated yesterday by Iowa, and then lost to Indiana for the first time in the first time in my lifetime, the first time in Justin's lifetime, the first time in Will Heininger's lifetime, probably the first time in most of your lifetime that Michigan had lost to Indiana. I shouldn't say my lifetime. I guess they lost to him when I was like 5 years old. So there's that. But Justin, Will, where are you guys today? I mean, you know, watching the game yesterday, and Michigan was down 24-7 at the half. They never really threatened. I guess they had one opportunity in the fourth quarter, but as soon as they closed at the sixth, they got picked off on probably Joe Milton's worst pass worst decision of the day. Jim Harbaugh after the game was talking about how they're really close. They're really good in practice. They were really good in practice, guys. You'd have to see practice, which, you know, none of us are allowed to do because Jim Harbaugh doesn't believe that that anybody should watch practice. He thinks that they've got to bring the surprise element to every single game. And you can't do that if anybody can see practice. So, you know, his whole argument is, guys, you know, I love this team. I believe in this team. We're talented. We're really, really close to breaking through. But at 1-2, facing Wisconsin this week with games against, a surprisingly good Maryland team, winless Penn State team, Ohio State at the end of the road. I mean, this looks like this is already a lost season, and it looks like it's going to get worse for Michigan before it gets better.
Yeah, I think we were kind of just talking about it. Last week after the Michigan-Michigan State game, we kind of all poured our hearts out and we were in an angry spot. Obviously, that was a tough one for any Michigan fan, former player, anybody to watch. And now we are just in a spot of like, what do you do? What do you think watching this Michigan football team where they're not showing much fight, they're not showing, you know, talent levels. It's a shell of the Michigan program that we've all come to love. And so, Will, from your standpoint, what did you think about the players' performance and fight, and same from the coaching staff as well? You know, obviously you've been on that sideline, you've been in that game before. When you're in a position like they were, you know, going down 24-7 at half, what's that locker room like at halftime? And is it difficult to actually show some fight? Because they did show some fight in the second half. But I want to hear from your thoughts what that team is feeling now.
Giant sigh. Morning, fellas. it's not hard to show fight in the second half. In fact, you know, maybe it would be easier to show fight when you're losing. But how about – showing fight on the first drive of the game and not being so undisciplined as to get multiple back-to-back offsides penalties and give them free plays at it. Like, oh, you can have the 5 yards, but here, take a shot at the touchdown if you want it. It looked not apathetic, but it looked like, again, we don't watch ourselves play football. There are countless examples, but just from the jump, we set that tone of, you know, not very ready to play, undisciplined. You could argue third week in a row, we didn't come out of the gates strong at all. Yesterday, it caught up to us, and caught up to us 2 weeks ago too. And it's I'm at a loss for words, fellas. It's really tough to watch. You don't want to be apathetic as a fan. We all love Michigan, but you know, one of my buddies texted me yesterday and was trying to process yesterday, and he said, "Well, at least you know my expectations were set a week ago with State, and I knew we weren't good." Was what he said. I knew we weren't good coming in.
Well, and Will, I think too, I mean, the idea of apathy, I mean, you know, last week when we did this podcast, all three of us were angry. All three of us were frustrated. All three of us had bluster moments where we were kind of howling and directing our frustration at someone, finger pointing and casting that blame. And this morning, I mean, the rest of this podcast, I think, is going to be, you know, just kind of a subdued take a little bit because – you know, they always say, like, how long does it take you to get over a loss? And I know as a football player, you're supposed to have like the 24-hour rule, but probably as a post-grad, as a fan, it's taking you a little bit longer. I mean, I've always said, like, it takes me longer when they lose. Last week, I was still ticked on Monday. I was still ticked on Tuesday about the way that they played against Michigan State. Yesterday, I think it was like 4 o'clock. Like, it might even be before the game was over. We had some friends over for a little social distance play time, and with our kids. And I mean, like, we were like the kids were in the leaves, we were throwing the Frisbee around. Like, we were just kind of like having a good time. It was a gorgeous day. And we're like, okay, Michigan football lost. So what? Let's go have a, you know, let's go enjoy ourselves. Had a great evening. You know, terrific dinner. Woke up this morning. The sun is out. Like, hey, great. I mean, it's, and that to me is honestly is an indictment on this, this program, and this coaching staff that I don't even care anymore.
Yeah, it's I only chuckle because the alternative is too sad, but it makes me think of, you know, it's like all the partners, girlfriends have had or friends have had who's just said, can't you get over it? It's just a game. It's like you're now treating it like they've always asked us to, of, you know, just get over it. You can be happy. It happened 3 hours ago. And, you know, Mike, you bring up a good point. So I grew up in Ann Arbor. I was a Michigan fan before I was a player, and you know, obviously love this program to death. I remember my reaction. Mike, you might remember this game. Justin, not sure, but in 2003, we were playing at Iowa, and we had lost to Oregon on the road, and Chris Perry ripped off like a 50-yard run near the end of the game, put us in position to win. They had a bullshit holding call, brought it back. I was 14 years old, didn't handle my emotions very well. You know, got pissed, threw the remote, threw the couch cushions, told my mom I wasn't going to the homecoming dinner that night for Pioneer High School. And she was a good enough, smart enough mom that said and knew what I cared about enough to say, okay, that's fine. If you don't go, though, you can't watch Michigan the rest of the year. And so I dragged my sad ass to Pizza House with my friends that night. And I wish that I still had that level of caring. I wish that I could be that upset, but I feel like, you know, emotionally the losses take their toll. And I mentioned to my buddy yesterday, he said, it's the fastest, like Mike, you know, it's the fastest I've ever gotten over a Michigan loss. It's the least painful Michigan loss. And while some people in our lives might hope that we can take it better that way or be more like that, I don't want it to become like that. I don't want it to be where we expect to lose or it's no big deal to lose or, oh, yep, that's what they showed us, and it's what we can come to look forward to. I'm not about that, and I don't think any Michigan fans and, you know, anybody associated with this program who loves this university is okay with that level of performance and that kind of expectation.
Well, and I mean, Justin, and, you know, we were talking about it before the podcast began, like, You know, I think it is what it is. And to what Will just said, I mean, the apathy setting in, the, you know, just kind of like the expecting these type of results. And I think that is where, you know, you want to talk big picture and you want to talk about the future of the program and whether or not Jim Harbaugh should be brought back for another year. He's got 1 year left on his contract, or if they need to get, you know, if they need to move on from Don Brown, if they need to move on from Josh Gattis and the whole thing. But the fact that you that quite a few of us went into the game yesterday expecting a poor result, and the fact that next week, if Michigan and Wisconsin do play the game, and it certainly looks like right now, you know, Wisconsin is in a better position with COVID than it was when it had a canceled Purdue game. If Michigan plays that game, I think all of us will be predicting a loss and are expecting more of the same. I think that is, you know, a huge indictment of where this program is headed. And why there's so many people, Michigan, you know, members of the media, but an overwhelming number of Michigan fans now who are kind of ready to change things up and go a different direction, because they don't see this program getting better. They see it getting worse.
Yeah. I want to ask you again, Will, here. You talked about the fan base and alums and former players being beaten down. And it seems like the team and this coaching staff looks exactly the same. They've gotten beat in the same fashion over and over, and it's happened to Ohio State. It's happened against Michigan State now. And we talked about this in the past, that Jim Harbaugh looks like a shell of a man, of the man that he was in 2016, 2015. And so it looks like they have been beaten down and don't have much fight left in them. So as obviously this is taking a toll on the fan base and they feel that way, do you think it's also been, you know, taking its toll on this team, the program and everything, where they think, you know what, maybe we can't do it. You know, maybe we aren't this, you know, an elite football team and an elite football program. So why even come out? I don't want to harp on these players, because I know that they work their asses off. I know that they want to come out and excel. And I know the coaching staff does too, but it does look apathetic on the field as well. And it seems like the whole program, players, coaches, fan base, everybody has the exact same attitude and demeanor at this point.
Justin, you bring up some good and also troubling points. You know, as far as the players go, luckily, you know, I think it takes a long time to truly get to a mindset of, like, you know, maybe we can't win or maybe we're not going to win. I mean, it took a couple years into the Rich Rod era to where that, you know, actual confidence of, you know, we can go out and execute and it still might not work based on the game plan and what our coaches have. And even when Wisconsin's running 13 personnel, which is one running back and three tight ends, and we decided to put three D linemen up there, like, that's the kind of thing where you, as a player, you realize, like, all right, you know, maybe we can't, you're putting us in positions where we can't win. I don't quite see that with this current team, but I do, it's almost like, you know, I keep saying this, but it's like, we don't watch ourselves. We don't see. So I just want to, I'll focus just on pass interference, because it's been something that's been a huge problem for us this year. Mm-hmm. Do I think we've had some shitty calls? We definitely have had some shitty calls, but do I think terrible technique towards the last 10% of the play has led to a lot of those calls? Absolutely. And now I think it's at the point where, and this is smart of the opponent, it's infuriating for us, but it looks like the other receivers are almost like jerking or bucking at the end just to try to get a call. Just like when we put our hands on them, hey, if they put their hands on you at the end, flail a little bit, right? And the flag comes out. And it's this type of consistently shooting ourselves in the foot, really working against ourselves is what it seems like, when it's hard enough to just beat the other team. And so I understand from the fan base, I understand how it looks. I feel just as frustrated. Luckily with the players, you are insulated enough in the sense of, like, you're busy, you're a student athlete, you're going to class and you're going to practice and you're getting treatment and you're essentially, that's about all the time you have to, besides doing your homework and watching film. And so luckily, I think the players are a little insulated and can continue on working to get better, but they got to work to get better and they got to get better. And if they're not improving, And right now it looks like we're regressing. You know, the writing's kind of on the wall.
Yeah. So let's talk. Yeah. Well, I mean, all those things you just said, I mean, were on display in the game yesterday, the pass interferences. You know, Vincent Gray and Jamon Green, Michigan's two starting cornerbacks, were both in better coverage. They were, you know, they were right there step for step with guys. They weren't falling down like we saw the week before. But, you know, they still don't know how to make a play on the football. They didn't get their heads turned around. They're wrestling and they're fighting as the ball is in the air. That's either leading to a pass interference, or they're so preoccupied with trying to grab jersey and the whole thing that instead of just turning around and going like, oh, here comes the ball and let me knock it down, the ball goes right over their shoulder, and it was a touchdown catch. A couple of times that happened against Vincent Gray. It happened once against Jamon Green. So let's talk about the game specifically yesterday and some of the things that went wrong. And guys, you know, taking the ball to start the game, totally understand why Jim Harbaugh wants to do that. He wants to set a tone. I think the fact that their first play of the game was a inside zone that got negative yards after what last week was. Like, I literally, like, I'm sitting there with a friend of mine, and I'm watching the first play, and I kind of actually burst out, like, in this almost, like, giggly laugh, because I was like, oh, my God. Like, oh, my God, they're going to do it again. Like, what the hell is this? And the second play was a little bit more creative, but it was something that we saw in week one against Minnesota. But when you bring Giles Jackson, you motion him into the offensive backfield, and it's not a running back, right? It's not Blake Corum. It's not Chris Evans. It's bringing a wide receiver into the offensive backfield next to him and then having him motion out. Like, you tip off the defense. Like, that's exactly – you talked about it last week, Will, where it's like you want to confuse a defense, you want to confuse an offense with, like, different things that you do, putting guys in different positions, Quipe moving all around the defensive line after week one. But when you bring a wide receiver in and he never plays running back, you know something – he's gonna get the ball. And so if you're the guy who's defining him, you just go right with him. You know he's getting the ball. And so instead of being any type of creativity, any type of, you know, new and unique play calling, understanding what Michigan's weaknesses and strengths are offensively, they put Joe Milton behind the chains, and now it's third and whatever it was, third and 13 to start the game. And I just thought to myself, like, here it is. You said it earlier. They don't understand themselves. They don't, like, scout themselves, and they don't offer a hard look at themselves. And here it was right on display in the first three plays of the game.
Yeah, or if they do scout themselves, it's not being done effectively because the changes aren't being made. And it's like you said, Mike, you know, we take the ball off the coin flip and all right, we're being aggressive, you know, we're changing things up. And then we go to, like, negative 3 yards inside zone. And then you bring up another good point as far as the window dressing and the motion. And I addressed some of this stuff in the more in the previous podcasts about, you know, a lot of it is to, for instance, like in the Capital One Bowl against Florida and Urban Meyer, Mike Hart and those guys, we realized that anytime you come out in empty, in fact, it was against Greg Madison's defense, interestingly enough, but if you come out against empty, as in no running back in the backfield, they are in a certain defense. Most defenses have checks for when there's no running back, when it's empty. And you motion Mike Hart back in and you can see, all right, they're either in zone or they're in man. So we would start with him out wide and bring him back in, and partly that's how we knew what coverage they were in and tore them up. Well, that was also a quarterback who had started for 4 years, you know, all Americans all over the field, tons of experience. And my point here is all that high-level stuff is great when you're playing chess with the defense if you already know how to play checkers and if you can get the 5 yards when it's given to you, when you block it and you take those 5 yards. Not like let's have a, you know, super complex offense window dressing that ultimately ends up just with conservative, non-explosive play calls. You might as well go back to, you know, being under center and a couple fullbacks, a couple tight ends and telegraph it that way. Because, you know, you can make it look fancy. You can throw a lot of motion in there and a lot of shifts. But at the end of the day, if the net of all of that is confusing your players more or not getting more than you would if you just lined up and went forward, you got to look at what you're doing.
Yeah, well, I mean, They're not the idea that they haven't been able to master checkers yet was a great analogy there. And it just, again, I think the problem was, is that after week two, after the Michigan State game, you know, they needed to figure out really quickly, like, what are we capable of doing well in this game? What are we not capable of doing well in this game? And I don't think if we're looking at the performance yesterday, you know, probably the thing that they do okay is throw the football. And throw the football if they get Joe Milton out of the, you know, out of the pocket. I mean, he actually did pretty well when he was throwing on the run. Ronnie Bell and Cornelius Johnson both had really good games at the wide receiver position, but they don't run the football very well. They don't have a guy. You know, we argued this week that Hassan Haskins and Blake Corum should have gotten more opportunities. They didn't really get that. They continued to run between the tackles, something that they're abysmal at. And then now they're trying to do it with a true freshman and a redshirt freshman making their first career starts in there. So I just don't think they have any idea what they do and what they can do well. Like, I don't know what the philosophy is offensively. I think that they're 3 weeks into the season and they're scrambling still and they're trying to figure out, which, you know, Jim Harbaugh has said multiple times that, you know, we're super prepared. We're ready to go. And I guess I'm at a loss because I don't know what they think they're prepared to do. Like, they're not prepared to run the football between the tackles, and yet they keep on trying to do so. It's just frustrating because it's this repetitive, like, Groundhog Day, watching them over and over again, where they don't really come out with a game plan that looks like it's going to be successful. They come out with you know, just kind of like a conservative, let's just kind of see how this goes. And I don't know, Will,
right,
and Justin,
let
am
me
I
ask
off
you guys,
base here? Like,
go ahead. Sorry.
No, am I off base here? Like, I'm just trying to make sense of this, and I just don't think that they even know what they're doing right now.
So it just came to me, I think, of what it seems it looks like. And when you said, you know, Harbaugh said we'd be ready this year and we'd be prepared, doesn't it almost seems like this is sort of how the non-conference games usually look. Like, when we're playing an Eastern or we're playing somebody where we're overmatched and mm-hmm. it seems like we waste some play calls on offense to figure out what works, you know, and see what we have, and they're trying stuff out, figuring out what our identity is. But we don't have that luxury this year. We are dropped into Big Ten play, looked ready for like a week, and then absolutely seemed to be a different team, or one that just – when it was hitting the mouth, wasn't interested in sticking with that fight and fighting back. I'm curious what you guys think, but it just came to me. It seems like, you know, almost like we're playing as if we have a big lead. Some of the play calls and like we're mm-hmm. playing an inferior opponent rather than, you know, we're about to go under 500. We're on the road in the Big Ten, and a team that hasn't beat us in decades is giving it to us.
Well, guys, Hassan Haskins did not get his first carry until the second quarter yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
That's your top back. Everyone knows that's your top back. It's been obvious in the first two games and the last year. So, and if they were running Zach Charbonnet, you know, instead, then sure. But Zach Charbonnet only got one carry too. So it's like, what is your identity? What are you trying mm-hmm. to do here? It's you talked about it, I think, Mike, last week, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. I can't even remember at this point, but he's like outthinking himself. He's trying so hard to be creative and do different things. But like, dude, just run your good running back and give him an off tackle and let him try to make a play. But it's how do you not get your top running back in the football game until the second quarter? You just wasted the entire first quarter. And so I look at the stats and see, you know, Stevie Scott, who's a great running back, but he's up to 24 carries for almost 100 yards. And Michigan doesn't have a player over six carries. And so it just blows my mind. Obviously, you know, the run game isn't working, so they're trying to do different things. But you have to get these guys on the field and get them into a rhythm and ready to play football. If you go out there and warm up and you're ready to go, and then you sit on the sideline for 15 minutes of play time, which is actually, you know, more like 45 minutes of real time, you're not going to be prepared and ready to go when you get that carry in the second quarter. So if you want to be the aggressive team that takes the football off the opening coin toss, then you better get your offensive guys ready to go play football. Instead, it was, I mean, those first couple three and outs were like, okay, well, our team hasn't even gotten off the bus yet. They really are not ready to play football. So if you want to have that aggressive mentality and say, we want the ball, we're going to go score, we're going to, you know, take this game into our own hands here, well, you better already have your team jacked up to go do that. And they didn't look like that until – it didn't seem like this team looked like they were ready to play until the third quarter when Milton started getting into a rhythm and they started moving the ball.
Yeah, I just don't know how you – like you said, how does it take until the second quarter, excuse me, to get your best running back a touch? And I know we're not in the days of, you know, 52 carries for Chris Perry at Michigan State anymore, but – I feel like it takes – you get in rhythm as you get touches, and great players need touches. And you make a good point, Justin. Like, you don't get in for a drive, and then the defense is on the field. You could go a quarter without getting loose, being on the field. And there's a rhythm to football. And so, you know, like, it just looks like we're outthinking ourselves, or we're not – we're trying new stuff and not taking the few things that are actually working and building off of those. So, Mike, I don't know where we go from here, but it doesn't seem like there's a ton of logic to some of the strategy that we've seen.
Well, I will say, you know, here's where we can go from here, at least on this podcast, is we can highlight a couple of positive things that happened yesterday. You know, I know Joe Milton had a really bad pass in the third quarter, and that one was hard to see because they made it 31-21. And all of a sudden you had a little bit of a glimmer of a chance, and then he throws his worst pass of the game. But for the most part, this is a guy with really good physical tools who is putting them on display probably like 60 to 70% of the time.
Yeah.
And you know, Michigan's the coaching staff, they need to develop him. They need to get him, you know, no one's 100%. I mean, you know, even what Joe Burrow did last year, what Justin Fields is doing this year, like few quarterbacks ever gets to are ever playing at that high of a level. But he's making some progress. He's making some great throws. He needs to get there. And you know, but he's someone that you can see as a positive, someone who you can build around in the future. Ronnie Bell continues to go out there and battle. He made some great catches, as did Cornelius Johnson yesterday. He fights for every single thing he gets. And so he is a positive on this Michigan offense.
If I'm Josh Gattis, if I'm even Jim Harbaugh in their Sunday meetings or Monday meetings this week, I would literally show Ronnie Bell's plays to the entire team, because yep. How many times did he, when they were down 24-7 or down 17 in the second half, was he still fighting for extra yardage? He was hustling. He was blocking. He did everything right yesterday, even when it seemed like there wasn't anyone else on that field that had fight. And there's probably other guys out there. I'm sure there are other guys that are fighting and that could be good examples of that. But he was the one that stood out to me where I'm looking at him and there, you know, there was the one play down the sideline where he had a great catch, and then you could hear him go, let's go. You know, he had fire still, even though the rest of the team looked flat. And so I would show, you know, those specific examples to the rest of the team as, guys, this is what we need to do. 11 guys on the field, all 11 guys need to do this and play like this for the entire game, all four quarters. And he just, to me, he stood out that he was a leader and he was a guy that was not going to give up until that final whistle blew. And there were so many, it was obvious that even in that third quarter when Michigan did go on a little run to bring it back to within 10, he was the guy that was going to be the go-to, and he was going to, you know, take this team on his back and really say, all right, I you know, I don't care what everyone else is feeling, but we need to come together and let's play some damn football and let's play hard and not give up. And so if I'm Jim Harbaugh, if I'm Josh Gattis, I'm saying, hey, here's five plays that Ronnie Bell did.
Yeah, just watch them. Just watch the effort. Yep. And like, that's, I don't understand how, even if you're on the worst team in America and you're 0-11, like, how do you personally not have that fight in you? Exactly. To not get your ass whooped, because that's, I mean, ultimately what it comes down to. Brandon Graham would always talk about, just beat your man. Just beat your man. It's the best advice he said he ever got. Just beat your man. If everyone does that, then we win the game. And if you're as good as him, you might have to beat two or three. But no, Mike, you both make good points, and there were some positives. I think, you know, you look at someone like Joe Milton, and if you, you know, took the name away and put it in a different era, just somebody with that profile, right? Inexperienced, ton of talent, a lot of upside, great arm, right? I feel like in the past, or in the Michigan that a lot of us know, that quarterback sort of is eased in, right, with a dominant running game, or at least an effective running game. And then you let him get some play action, get some throws to tight ends in, a couple comebacks to the receivers, right? You start building their confidence. And so the 70% of the time that they are playing good, right, it shows, it comes through, you build off of that, and you can kind of rely on the experience, the success, and the dominance of the rest of the team while you get your feet wet. And instead, because we don't have a veteran team or a dominant team, and we're not able to sort of work him in, I feel like the positives, while they are positives, they're, you know, you can see him right on TV and watch those throws be made, watch some of the reads even be made when he decides to get rid of it quickly, and it's great. But then the negatives stand out because they end up costing us, because we don't end up winning, because we don't finish the drive, or we get behind the chains and then we turn the ball over. Or like you said, we finally have, you know, we're within 10 and we have a guy running down the middle and we don't make that throw. And so it's not as negative as we're probably painting it, but sort of looking at the reasons why it appears to be, you know, so frustrating, so negative, and we're not able to look at the positive as much. But, you know, could go across the roster, and there's a lot of things to be excited about, but obviously when we don't win, it's really tough to feel that.
Yeah, and we'll talk more, Justin and I will talk more about the running game this week, especially when we talk to Reuben Riley later on in the week, because that to me is the most serious concern right now. They have no idea what they're doing with the running backs. They're in a world of hurt, literally, with the two of their tackles out. They're playing a lot of young guys. As Will, you just said, like, normally you allow a quarterback to come along a little bit more slowly. Now, I've been advocating that you've got to, you know, if a guy's a redshirt sophomore, if he's a sophomore, you got to start turning these guys. You've really got to find a way to make these players, you know, I don't want to say hit the ground running from day one, but, you know, you look at Clemson yesterday against Notre Dame, and the true freshman filling in for Trevor Lawrence throws for 450 yards and 5 touchdowns in the game. On the road at Notre Dame winning, but you know, what an incredible performance. Like, quarterbacks are getting the job done, but they're not helping him out at all, because they're not putting him in any advantageous situations. Every third down is a third and long. You know, his receivers are dropping balls. I think there were 3 drops yesterday, including from unfortunately Eric All, who's got his third drop in as many games. You know, he's a player that probably needs to take a seat for a little while. Vincent Gray is a player that probably needs to take a seat for a little while, because I just don't know how they've got the confidence here. But I want to jump sides of the ball. I want to talk about something that I really want to get Will's take on, it because it's just one of the most infuriating things that I saw. It's probably the only time yesterday that I got really mad, and I'll tell you what that is in just a second. But I want to give a shout-out to one of our great sponsors, Wolverine State Brewing Company. I'm checking out their menu right now. They're open on Sundays from 12 to 9 p.m. They're not open on Mondays, but Tuesday 3 to 10, Saturday 12 noon to 10 p.m. And some of their sandwiches right now, their Brewmaster sandwich with pulled pork or barbecue chicken, amber lager barbecue sauce on your choice of brioche bun or Texas toast, served with a side of coleslaw and kettle chips. You can also get brisket on that. Nate, our friend Nate, told us about the Pitmaster plate, your choice of 2 house smoked meats and 2 sides. So either pulled pork and chicken, you can get ribs, you can get brisket. They obviously have their famous nachos. The stimulus package was named for my show. That is fried bologna, slice of Adelia onion, Velveeta cheese, pickle slices, and yellow mustard on Texas toast, served with kettle chips and an ice-cold bottle of Wolverine Premium Lager. You can check out the entire menu by visiting wolverinebeer.com, including their beers right now that you can get both in a crowler and a growler. Or you can pick up a 4-pack. You can find them at 2019 West Stadium Boulevard in Ann Arbor. So there's a little bit of a silver lining, some good food. Anytime you can eat good food, that always puts me in a better mood. But Will, so you're a defensive guy, a guy with a lot of pride. I don't know if you saw this moment because it was late in the game and maybe you already, you know, mentally tuned out at that point. But it's 31-21. Indiana comes all the way down the field after the interception. They're on the goal line. And I believe it was Stevie Scott gets the ball, bulldozes Brad Hawkins, Michigan safety, who has, you know, had two pass breakups in this game. Both of them were balls that should have been interceptions.
Yeah,
wasn't in the right position to help Vincent Gray over the top a lot of times. He gets absolutely bulldozed into the end zone, like on his heels, on skates, like they used to say. I mean, the guy like pushes him like 2 yards back. And yep. as the running back is celebrating, Brad Hawkins is talking trash to him. And I thought to myself, like, this is where Michigan football is right now. You just got punked. And instead of like getting off the sideline or getting over to the sideline and just getting off the field, you're talking trash to the guy who just ran through you. Like, that to me, I was infuriated as a fan, as a coach. Like, if I get into the film room and because I don't know if you can see that from the sideline or not, but if I get in the film room and I see my guy talking trash after he just got knocked around, I don't know, Will. To me, that was the moment right then where I said, like, wow, this is how far Michigan has fallen. You're talking trash after you just gave up a touchdown.
Yeah, and just make sure I throw one positive into this segment. The nachos at Wolverine are delicious as well. So
that's nachos. Check
those. Those nachos are phenomenal. But, Mike, that was as hard to see as anything. I mean, to me, the talking shit, you know, it was tough, but getting run over for me is a little tougher to see. But you're right. I mean, neither of them have a place for us and for what we're trying to do. And it was sort of an embodiment of the season and where we seem to be at. But let me just ask, like, where is that fight pre-snap? Where is that fight going mm-hmm. into the game? Where is that mental focus and concentration play to play that allows you to, okay, if you think you're better than that guy, then go execute play after play. Because that's what's fun is winning, is seeing the scoreboard as these plays add up. And as you see their offense get off the field and you get to give the ball back to your offense, right? But I don't know. It just blows my mind as somebody who enjoys talking stuff. And I feel like you either have it or you don't. But that is one situation, whether you're in kindergarten and you're at recess or, you know, you're playing in the Super Bowl. I don't think anybody should be feeling much pride after you get, like you said, punked and dragged into the end zone. It's a sad state of affairs, Mike. And unfortunately, that's one example. But if you did put on that film, you could probably find a number more examples where we just aren't bringing the fight, or at least what's needed between the lines. And then we still decide we want to act like we are.
It reminded me of John O'Korn starting a fight against Ohio State after he threw his last interception and essentially lost the game against them. Sorry to bring up John O'Korn.
Yeah. I mean, if we're going to talk about John O'Korn, can we talk about for a minute that if you watch the Amazon Prime series that they did a couple of years ago, the best John O'Korn moment, and again, I really don't like to go after one player, one person. I don't like to do personal shots, but John O'Korn after the Michigan State game when he threw three interceptions and they lost, and he's like on that video talking to, I guess, a former teammate of his from Houston. He's talking about how he's all about the NFL and how he hopes that game doesn't cost him his NFL opportunity. And I was like, what the F are we talking about here? Like, oh my gosh. Like, anyway. Guys, let me ask you this question. So that, to me, the Brad Hawkins moment was the most disappointing part, but defensively, Will, you know, we're second straight week. It could have went completely wrong. Now, if we're going to, I mean, we're not favorable to Don Brown here. And I think everybody's reached their limit with Don Brown, but he employed a ton of zone yesterday. He employed all those things that people have been clamoring for and just saying, like, he's got to do this, he's got to do that. He did all of it yesterday. None of it worked. So why did none of it work? And what, you know, where does Michigan go from here? I mean, is this just who they are now? Are they a sieve on defense that they're, I mean, yes, we can talk about how this is an offensive game and you're going to give up points, but I mean, they're getting shredded right now.
Yeah. It was encouraging to see us at least be willing to adapt. And then obviously the result was not encouraging. Part of why it didn't go well is because we don't do much zone. And when you try something for the first time, and it usually isn't your best performance, and it takes time to get better at. And generally the first time you would think wouldn't be on a national stage, or something that you only resort to once your original plan isn't working. And it's frustrating in its own right that we don't just have more zone, less predictability baked in the first place. Because now guys are, you know, we weren't performing at that high a level in the first place, played man, and they're still trying to figure out, you know, clearly how to play technique there, how to be able to mess with the receiver without getting called, stay in phase. And then we changed the zone and don't have any more marked success. You know, Mike, defense is a really, it's such an interesting thing, because you can have the same 11 guys. Shoot, I'll go back, you know, 2010 to 2011, I think we went from 110th in defense to 10th in defense, and even lost a couple of guys to the NFL, and got that much better. It really has to do with all 11 guys playing their individual jobs so well, so that it comes together in a way that they're all playing together. And you hear defensive guys talk about it, but you can just see it when you're watching it. And our defense looks so far from that. It never looks like all 11 guys are on the same page or are working together. Sometimes it looks like we get away with something because we have a great play. Excuse me. But we are at a point where I don't know what to expect from this defense. At least the last 6-7 years, you could say, all right, we're going to come play our asses off on defense, and I hope we can get it done on offense. And now on defense, Mike, it's almost like you want to cover your eyes.
I want to say that I think the most frustrating thing for Michigan fans is going to be when there are 4 or 5 guys from this defense that go really high in the NFL draft and become really good players at the next level. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, Don Brown and at Michigan, they could not put it together to make us a solid defense or even a decent defense. I think that's going to be very frustrating for Michigan fans to watch. And as far as the zone goes, it literally looked like none of those guys have ever played zone in their lives.
Yeah.
I was watching Brad Hawkins a lot and multiple other guys, and it's, I don't want to like put this on them because they were not put in a spot to succeed in that position there, but they were trying to cover a zone. But when you're in a zone, you have your zone, but when the guy comes in your zone, you have to cling to him. You have to
hit that man. Thank you.
They were like covering their zone, but then they just kind of stay in that zone without getting to the guy that was in their zone.
and just, well, like, you're playing football. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, Will, I mean, I'll say this. So I'm on Twitter this morning, and there's a guy, his Twitter handle is Jay Do, which I would highly suggest any Michigan fan to go watch, because he and another one called Space Coyote, hey, it's Twitter, give him a break. I don't know what the real names are, but I think they're both former coaches or at least former players, and they do a lot of film breakdown after games, and they discuss things. And so one of the things I was watching this morning, because honestly, I was kind of checking out during the game yesterday. So I was watching their plays and talking about the zone. And so, yeah, I agree with both of you guys. They look like they don't ever practice it, right? Like, they look like they don't know what they're doing. You know, there's a play that, you know, they actually get a little bit of pressure on Michael Penix Jr. But there's a slot receiver that runs free up the middle, and they complete a pass to him, and they show the play, and there's a linebacker and Will, like, yes, you're in zone, you're not playing man to man, but part of your responsibility early on is to like chuck that guy, to like hit him close to the line of scrimmage so that he has to slow down just enough to get into his route that allows the pressure then to get to the quarterback. But if you don't ever put your hands on him, then he just runs free and you can hit him right in the middle. And that happened like multiple times in this film review that I'm watching. And then there's a play where I think it's Michael Barrett blitzes off the edge pretty early on in the game, and the running back gets out in the flat, and there's nobody out in the flat because players talk about this all the time, and Will, I'll let you explain it a little bit better, but you always talk about like your assignment on a given play. And so on this particular play, the assignment of this linebacker is, hey, I know Michael Barrett's coming on blitz. My assignment is to cover the flat area to be out there in case that they throw the running back. And what happens is the play comes, Michael Barrett blitzes, the linebacker has got his eyes in the backfield watching Michael Penix Jr. All of a sudden he throws the flat, and where's the linebacker? Not anywhere to be seen, because he's not doing his job. He's trying to do somebody else's job.
Yeah, you said it. And even when we get the pressure, the back end wasn't there to take care of it. Now, you both nailed it. I mean, and if you guys are saying this stuff, then, you know, and we all see it, why aren't our guys focusing on it? So let's just break it down like something everyone's done, backyard football, right? There's no referees. The quarterback's trying to complete the pass, and the best way to prevent that is to interfere with, get in the way of, disrupt the receiver, right? And that still is true when you're playing football on the college or professional stage. Although, okay, yeah, there are referees, but what are you allowed to do, right? You are allowed as a defender to hit the receiver, and now, you know, there's no targeting launching anymore, but you are allowed to put your hands on them, to put your shoulder into them, redirect the routes so that their timing is messed up, so that they don't have a free run. And anybody who's ever caught a pass or can imagine just catching a pass, even at a tailgate, if somebody shoves you before you have a chance to catch it or while you're running, it makes it harder to complete the play. And it's these little basic tenets of football that not only do I see missing often, I see missing almost constantly. And so, like, even when I was coaching high school, I would literally say before every play and scream to redirect the routes, hit the receivers, because it's easy to forget when you're a young player that you're allowed to do that. It's also why in the NFL, because they want points to be scored, that they don't allow you to do that after 5 yards to make it more advantageous for the offense. Well, as you said, Justin, a lot of these guys may end up being in the NFL, and we can do that when we're there, right? But for now, when we're in college and you're allowed to hit the receivers and you're playing zone, it doesn't mean stand your ass in an area and watch them complete a pass. Mike, the example you gave, every single blitz, there's a curl to flat defender. That means you have the curl and you break on the flat, and the curl being that sort of hook zone, right? Well, hook's more in the middle, but sort of off the hash behind the outside linebacker, and then you rally to the flat. Well, if your eyes aren't in the right place and you're making sure the blitz gets home and he throws the flat route, not only are you not there to tackle it and make a 3-yard gain or whatever, but then you don't do your job. The next guy is covering his deep third or whatever his assignment is. So you go from a 3-yard gain to probably a first down and maybe even a big play. And it's those types of things. It's missing those types of details on defense that leads to snowballing in a bad way, because offenses and smart offensive coordinators see that stuff. They see where we consistently aren't pulling our weight or aren't executing, and they pick it apart. And I think we saw that yesterday, and we'll continue to see it until we play really sound physical defense. And that's the thing that's, I think, hardest for me to watch and to see is just us physically getting pushed around, not being aggressive, and yeah, getting dominated instead of being the dominator.
There was one specific play yesterday where Quiddy Pay essentially made one move on the left tackle and was to the quarterback in less than 3 seconds. But yep. Michael Penix was able to just sit there. He took the hit after he threw it, but he delivered a dart right in between three defensive secondary guys and completed a pass for 15 yards. And
was the receiver touched?
That's what I was just about to say. Is to me, it's because he knows they've practiced that throw, you know, 1,000 times, and he knows he's going to that exact spot. Well, if our guys knock him off his route and he's 3 feet to the left of where he should be, then it's not a completed pass because our secondary is able to close the gap there, and there's not a window for Michael Penix to get it in there. But the fact that Quiddy Pay, who made it in a fantastic move to get to the quarterback, should have gotten a sack out of it, honestly. And still, they complete the pass for 15 yards. It's an indictment on everybody who had a chance to chip that guy, that tight end or whoever it was. I can't remember who caught the ball, but whoever, they didn't knock him off his route. They didn't do anything to disrupt the play. They're letting him get to his spot, and when you these teams, when the offenses are in practice and they're going over their routes, if you let them get to their exact routes that they've practiced 100 times,
it's seven on seven. Like
it's so easy for an offense to just connect on all those things, and so that's where I think it for Michigan's offense on the other side too, it's been really difficult for them because they have not been able to get separation. They've been knocked off their routes, and now Joe Milton doesn't know the exact spot that he's throwing to all the time, and so it's been very difficult for him and his receivers to connect on the other side.
And these are, you know, especially the linebacker core. I mean, you know, those are the guys that in those positions, they need to get their hands on someone early on. And these are experienced linebackers. I mean, I know Cameron Grohn's only a redshirt sophomore, but he's a full year starter. And Josh Ross is a redshirt junior and has been, you know, a starter before. And, you know, the defense is not as young as the offense. I mean, you've got Carlo Kemp in there. You've got Diamond Jeter, Quiddy Pay. I mean, Aiden Hutchinson got hurt yesterday, but his replacements coming in are third year players. And one, you know, Luigi Villain, a fourth year player. I mean, you know, the secondary, Brad Hawkins is a senior, Daxon Hill, you know, Vincent Gray, he's a redshirt sophomore, but he's a third year. I mean, they've got a lot of experience, and they just completely look, like they're out of sorts. So gentlemen, I want to kind of finish up with, you know, something I don't think anybody really wants to contemplate. But here we are. Yesterday, Aiden Hutchinson walked off the field with an injury, and he was seen in a boot. Now, he just may not be able to come back physically at all. Like, he might just be done physically. Jalen Mayfield missed the game with an injury, supposedly going to be out for quite a while. You know, Will, I would say in the past, guys probably would have said, hey, I'm going to battle in rehab and everything like that to get back for the final game, to get back for the November push. I mean, we're in November now, but to come back for a little bit of the season, I think there's a pretty decent chance Jalen Mayfield just completely shuts it down. Aiden Hutchinson shuts it down. Quiddy Pay got banged up. He'll probably shut it down. You're going to have a lot more players probably shut it down instead of like going out there and trying to get back for the rest of the season. And so if all of a sudden – you wake up on Monday morning and Mayfield, Hutch, and Quiddy Pay are all going to take themselves out of the running for the rest of the year. This could get a lot uglier for Michigan. And I mean, if you're someone like, you know, even like someone like Daxon Hill, you could say like, you know what? I don't know if I want to, I mean, that's a possibility that these guys could just opt out the rest of the year. And so I'm just kind of wondering, like, where does Michigan football go from here? I mean, you said it as a player, Will. I mean, you know, you suffer that first loss, and guys kind of like, I've heard it for 20 years. Guys are like, hey, you know, we're going to come together as a team. We're going to rally. We're going to, you know, we're going to work harder. When you lose that second, I've often found in the media that you don't get that same rhetoric from players. You kind of get to like, well, you know, there's things we got to work on, the whole thing, but you can see the energy is already sapped out of them. You're 3 games into the season. I don't know that this team is going to put up, they haven't put up much of a fight in these 2 losses. I don't think this team is going to put up fight much of the rest of the year.
Man, we better see some fight. I don't care if it's from true freshmen. You know, you make a good point, and it's something that I really struggle with because it's changed in the last 10, 15 years. And it's changed as I've, you know, lived into adulthood, frankly, because from a player's perspective, put it this way, there are people in these guys' ears, there just are, saying, you know, oh, your money's on the line and you should think about opting out. And I get it. from a player's perspective, for the most part, you want to play football, and it is really hard to sit out. So unless you are guaranteed to have life-changing money, personally, I don't know how I would be able to do it. However, I understand the economic part of it because, you know, look, I'm somebody who never really thought about playing in the NFL, had a great fifth year. You know, Madison called me in, said you can play in the NFL if you want to, and ended up, you know, having a horrible foot injury right before the Sugar Bowl. And would I ever have made it? Who knows? But guess what? 1 year on a practice squad or one year at minimum there would have been, you know, as much money as I've made my entire career. And so I understand economically where guys are coming from, and I can't knock them if that's their choice. However, whoever is on the field, there better be some fight, because you said it could get a whole lot worse. I'm not sure how much worse it could get. If we're going to lose, I'd rather see guys who love being out there, who are fighting tooth and nail, and who are getting experience. And, you know, I just also want to just send my thoughts to Hutch. You hate to see anybody get hurt, and Jalen, and, you know, hope they heal quickly. But I guess, Mike, I'm trying to look for a silver lining of, you know, if they do and that's the decision they make, then we get some young guys' experience. But I will say this, if that's done, how it's done is a big deal, right? The difference between, hey, I'm making this decision, my teammates understand why I'm still here and supporting them and, you know, a part of it, but not risking injury, or like, man, I'm out, you know, I'm done with this. Then that can really take a toll on a program and on the morale of younger guys. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But it's a really sort of complex, multifaceted situation that guys face when they're in that position.
Yeah, I don't know. I think like all Michigan fans this morning, just trying to make sense of, you know, what the rest of the year is going to look like. Does it get way worse? I mean, 2014 was the last time it really cratered underneath Brady Hoke, and we saw Michigan lose to Maryland, right? We saw the end of the season. I think they finished, 5-7. I was sick and out of commission that year, so I kind of, 2014 was pretty much a blur to me. As I was battling bacterial meningitis.
I remember.
But, yeah, so I don't say I'm good memories. I don't have any memories of like the 2014 season. You guys got to fill me in. Like, what happened there? I know they tried to get
you're
away.
Good.
I think
you're good.
Yeah.
Let's like, skip just, that one.
Is that where this rest of the season is headed? I mean, Maryland just spanked Penn State yesterday. Like, it is, if they play this game against Wisconsin, another loss is likely, even though Wisconsin hasn't played a game in 2 weeks. I mean, then you've got, you've got Maryland, Rutgers, Penn State, Ohio State left in the schedule, and Rutgers has at least shown some fight. I think Michigan still beats them, but I mean, there's a possibility Michigan finishes this year 3-5 in year six of the Jim Harbaugh, 3-5. I don't know what to do with that. And I think we're all, you know, I think I represent most Michigan fans when I say that we're all kind of at a little bit of a loss this morning. Like, how did we get here? Like, how did something, if you take me back to December, I think it was like December 30th or something like that, 2014, Jim Harbaugh arrived as the Michigan head coach. Like, how are we 6 years later in this place mentally, emotionally, physically, where we're just expecting Michigan to go, go downhill even further from here? I think it's really sad. And to Will, I hope that we see that fight from those younger guys and some veterans too. And I hope that Joe Milton continues to progress. And I don't know. I came into this game, I was telling Justin on Friday, I came into this game with like a level of excitement because there's so many things I wanted to see out of this Michigan football team. And now I find myself going like, next week for Wisconsin, I don't think there's going to be that level of excitement. I mean, if the game wasn't played at night, if it was in the middle of the day and I had other things going on, like I'd probably just kind of have it on in the background. I might still just have it on in the background. And I don't think in my entire life, other than 2014, that I've ever had Michigan football on in the background, as I put in air quotes, where I'm not really paying attention, where I haven't made it must-see TV, where I'm just kind of like doing my own thing, having some friends over, enjoying myself. I've always been locked in to the point where I've been an obnoxious person to watch a game with, where friends and family don't want to watch it. My wife doesn't even want to watch a game with me because she's like, you're so boring and dull and you You don't cheer and you don't get excited. You're not like this. You're just so focused. And that's because I like, that's how much my passion is and how much I care about it and the results and like wanting to see things. And now I'm kind of like, you know what? Like, let's just have your parents over next weekend. Let's just have, you know, let's just kind of like, let's just drink some wine and like sit back and chill. And we'll just leave it on in the background. If they score a touchdown, I'll be like, yay. And if they don't, and when they lose the game, I'll be like, okay, let's just move on and have some, like, that's where I'm at right now. And I just can't believe I'm here considering the excitement at the end of the 2014 calendar year, all the promise that that Jim Harbaugh brought to this program.
Will, let me ask you this. As a player, you've obviously been on some not so great teams, unfortunately, at Michigan. And so you talked earlier about how busy you are as a student athlete. So sometimes you don't even feel that. Would you feel that from the fan base, the non-excitement? Because I think you can feel the excitement sometimes, you know, when there's buzz around the town and you know that Saturday is about to be a huge game. Do you also feel the non-excitement? Do you think these guys are kind of going into this week like nobody really cares about this game, or are they getting back into it, going to work the same way that they would any other week?
Yeah, so I mean, luckily for them, it's more like a job where, and I'm not trying to get into the politics of paying players. I'm talking more about the way that it's approached and the way you're expected to show up and work, regardless of what's going on. And so they don't that stuff doesn't seep in as much. But I'm still just sort of at a loss thinking about what Mike Spath just said. Somebody who loves Michigan to the extent that he does, and to have a Michigan game on sort of in the background. And it hit me because I feel like we cut from that same cloth, and I know that feeling, and it's so foreign. It's like, wait, what? Like, I don't care. And I think it's a result of caring so much for so long and being hurt over and over is like, all right, what's the defense mechanism? So sorry to digress there, but no, you know, the players are going to go work, and that's the good thing about, you know, being in college and, you know, being 18 to 22 and being a part of a program where there is work to do. So you have to, you know, focus on the components of your day, and maybe they get on social media and see stuff at the end of the day. But ultimately, you know, I don't care if everybody cares, and I don't care if nobody cares. They shouldn't care. They should go out and care about executing their job on every single play, and you'd be amazed at what the scoreboard ends up looking like at the end of the game. I will still go on record to say, like, we had more talent on the 2010 football team at Michigan than the 2011 team, and maybe on the 2009, whatever it was, but we went from 5-7 and then whatever, 7-6 to 11-2 by playing together, by having a different staff, by believing in ourselves, by slowly building that confidence. And Craig will tell you, you know, Justin Craig will tell you, like, we didn't know we were going to be great, but by the third game, we knew we had a pretty good defense, and we all knew we had a quarterback who could score in, you know, in one play. And so I want to see these guys come out and show some pride in themselves, for their families, for Michigan, whatever it is where they have to reach down and find it, right? I mean, go out and be a competitor. No one wants to lose. So I don't care if the game's not on TV at all. If, you know, you're on radio or you're on televised, there's no media. I'd like to see us go out and perform the way that got you to Michigan. Just, I'm at a loss for words, fellas. Now my frustration's getting worked up thinking about it. But, Mike, as far as the expectations the rest of the season, I'm trying not to have any, because it could be whatever. It could be 2-6. It could be – 6-2, doesn't look likely, but I'm just going to evaluate week to week with what I see and talk with you guys about it the next day.
Well, that sounds good, Will, and wish you know, hope that you have a great Sunday. Justin, hope that you have a great Sunday. You know what? Here's the thing is I think all of us will have a great Sunday because it's a gorgeous day. Mm-hmm. Will, you get to see your dad. You're out in Chicago. Yes, Justin, sir. You'll probably do something fun with Jacqueline. You know, we're going to have dinner with my in-laws, and just kind of, I mean, it's gorgeous. We're going to take John for a walk. We're going to go out there and live our life. There's going to be no hangover. There's going to be no like, oh man, like I'm still so frustrated. Oh, I'm so angry. Like, just going to move on with life. Yep. And that's, again, you know, maybe that's the way it should have been all along. But I think for a lot of football fans, there's more to it than that. But here we find ourselves just kind of like, whatever, you know, no big deal. This is what Michigan football does to us. So it's sad. And we will talk about it more. We'll have a couple more podcasts this week. We'll look ahead to the Michigan-Wisconsin game. At the moment, guys, they're planning on playing this game. For Wisconsin, if they want to qualify for the Big Ten Championship, they have to play in six games. So they have to play this game on Saturday night. So I think they'll be extremely motivated because I don't think they don't want to call it on their season just yet. And obviously the most important thing is that everybody does it healthy. You don't want either team to be put in a position where they're trying to, you know, play a game when there is a big COVID outbreak. And there is a circumstances that would lead it to, you know, lead you to a little bit of uncertainty about, you know, lining up opposite the other team. So we'll come back. We'll talk about it next week. We'll be talking about a win. Probably not. But you never know. Things happen in football.
And
maybe this year. Yeah. Maybe this team will show the resolve. So, Will, thanks very much for joining us. Really appreciate it. You guys have a great rest of your Sunday.
Thanks. Take care and go Blue.
Thanks, guys.
This is the Stadium and Main podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.